Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified, and this is the longest-running financial show live on the air in the Northwest. It has a financial planner, a estate planning attorney, and a CPA. So welcome to Investing Simplified. I want to introduce my co-host today, Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Stege with the Baker Coulson CPA firm.
Good morning.
And Kevin's going to hit one out of the park today on the tax investigator, because we're going to talk about some ideas, right?
End of the year tax planning ideas has begun.
Yeah. So anybody you know that needs to plan for this, you need to pick up the phone, call them, wake them up, get that cup of coffee in them, have them turn on the radio and listen to this show, right?
That's right.
Yep. Good. Okay. And by the way, if you do want to call and ask a question, this is the time when you can call and ask attorney something for free. I mean, how can you beat that, right? We got to beat up on the attorney a little bit, but you could call and ask Carl a question for free, and you know what? Free is a good price, right, Carl?
Free is a good price. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And you could call us at 503-417-7626 or toll free 800-990-0750. Well, unless you've been living in a cave, you know the market kind of went a little nuts this last week and had kind of a regroup. And we still think it's got some regrouping to do and still going to go up and seek back the highs. But once it hits those highs again, I would not be overly aggressively investing, because we think there's going to be a step back down and a readjustment on the overall markets. And speaking about the markets, I'm just going to give a quick update here on the markets. Now, again, the information we tell on this show is in general terms. It's not to be taken as exact advice for you to go out and buy or sell or invest or do legal action or do a tax action without really talking to a professional, sitting down one-on-one, your situation, explaining what it is, knowing all the facts, and then get advice. And if you don't do that, this show isn't going to be giving you the advice that way. We're going to give it to you in general terms. But if you're going to take action, go see a professional. The Dow Jones closed the week of 24. Now, this is all off of Yahoo Finance, and you can look at yourself at this. I know several of my clients do look at this every day and kind of watch the market, what's going on, because it tells you a whole bunch of material. But the Dow Jones closed on Friday the 24th at 16,805. It was up 127 points. That generates 0.76, not quite that 1 to 1.5% that I'm concerned about the volatility, but believe me, we had enough volatility during the week, some days up 2.5%. You know, that's a lot of volatility. And what that tells you is there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. Uncertainty is not good when it comes to the market. I don't care if it's up or down. It's not good either way. The Dow Jones now closed at 16,805.41. Now, where did it stand on 10,907 at 14,164.53? Well, in that 7 years and 2 weeks, we are up 18.64%, or an average rate of return of 2.66%. If you're talking to a financial advisor and they are only telling you the last 5 years of an investment that you're looking at buying, the first thing you need to immediately do is say, could you please give me the 10-year results? Because I'm going to tell you, the 10-year results is going to be closer to these numbers I'm telling you than they are the numbers they're telling you for a 5-year result. That is a fact. Now, if we go back and look at the Dow since 12/31/99, the Dow closed at 11,497. So for the 13 years and 9.5 months, it's up 46.17. Now, that sounds like a great run, 46.17. But when you divide it by the years, it comes out to 3.35. That's not good for an index that the 80 years before averaged about 9.5. It's about a third of what it normally is. The S&P closed at 1964.58. It was up 13.76, and again up almost 0.75 points. Now, where does the S&P stand when it closed on 10/9/07 at 1565.15? Well, in those 7 years and 2 weeks, we're up 25.52, or 3.62% a year. The S&P should always outperform the Dow. It's more aggressive, your risk versus reward. You need to take a look at that. That's what counts, is what is your risk? What are you willing to take in volatility in your own portfolio? If you're willing to take a 20% hit, but to make a 20% gain, then you can be a little more aggressive. Just don't be unhappy when your portfolio drops 30. If that's what you bargain for, life will give you what you bargain for. It's called volatility. So that's your risk reward. You've got to be willing to take the risk if you want to get the reward. Okay, the S&P 500, where did it close on 12/31/99? It closed at 1469.25. So in 13 years, 9.5 months, the S&P did 33.71%, or an average of 2.44. That's an index that the 80 years before was over 10. These are not good numbers. And when you hear people saying the economy is good, it's only in their mind. It's not a fact. The facts are the facts. We have less people working today. We have more people drawing government subsidy of various kinds. And like Kevin pointed out here a few weeks ago, if you go back 6 years, the average family has less income. This is not a good picture, folks. The only saving grace we have going right now is that real estate prices dropped down. They haven't gotten back all the way yet, and they're still relatively reasonable. We got good low rates, and hey, gasoline ain't a bad price anymore. It's looking pretty good at the pump, you know. And so I think there are some pluses, and if it wasn't for that, and unfortunately, the government's done everything they could to cause prices of oil to go up, and yet they're still going down. So that is a plus for us, and a black eye for them, because we're winning that one. Okay, where did oil close? Oil closed at 83.04, and last week, and this week it was at 81.26. Is heading down, and I'm going to tell you a little prediction here. I believe that oil prices will go down to 60 to 65. That's my little prediction. You can call me if I'm wrong, but I think over the next 6 months to a year, you will see oil prices drop in that price range. Now, I'm not going to say how long they're going to stay there, but I think we're going to drop down to there. Gold closed at last week at 1238.50, and it closed this week at 1230.90, so it came down a little bit. Here's the concern, is that the 10-year bond, and Kevin, a couple times last week it dropped below 2%. Can anybody say manipulation? Anyway, the 10-year bond rate last week closed at 2.2, and this week it closed at 2.27. You know, those numbers are not good. They're great if you want to borrow money, and they're great if you have to finance your home or you have to finance something. They're really not good in the economy, particularly if you're a senior. And I want to address this to the seniors out there, because seniors are really limited to where you can go for money. And I have a saying that I say to a lot of people when they tell me they want to put their money in a 6-month CD, or they want to put their money in a bank earning 20 basis points or earning 1% in their CD. And I tell them, you know, you can go broke safely. You can lose money safely, particularly if we do get into high inflation and things start going up and you've got your money sitting in a CD at a low rate. It's not a good thing. And I do want to introduce you to a concept that I've not talked about. I talked about once on the show, but I'm going to talk about it again, because I have a new video that's coming out on my website. In fact, I believe it's up there already. You can either see it at pfgwm.com or you can see it at the askthefinancialdoctor.com. And I have a video on alternative CDs. This is for the person who says, I don't want to tie all my money up in a dang annuity, particularly if you're older. You don't want to tie it up in an annuity for 10 years or whatever. You want to have the money available, somewhat available, but you want it FDIC insured. We have a product called an alternative CD that I do for some of my seniors who just want to sleep at night. They don't want to worry about their money. They want it federally insured. Now, these are alternative CDs where they have like a 1 or 2% rate, but they also have a market adjustment that they're actually invested in. Some are invested in commodities. Some are invested in gold. Some are invested in silver. Some are invested in the stock market. They have an alternative, but the difference here is they're only playing. You have everything's FDIC insured, so if you put $100,000 in, you are always guaranteed to have your $100,000, and it's FDIC insured, so you cannot lose it. Now, we offer these from $100,000 up to $250,000. Of course, $250,000 is the insurance limits. The one thing about these is they're an accumulation investment, very similar to an annuity, except it's not managed by an insurance company. Most of these are handled by federal banks that are FDIC insured. And the funds accumulate for the 6 or 8 years, depending how long you tie the money up, and then you can draw it all out. So there's a little bit of limitation. You got to leave the money in there. Very similar to an annuity, except it's not with an insurance company. And if you go back and look at what the insurance companies have paid on indexed annuities or income annuities that have guaranteed principal, they've really averaged about 5.5. And these alternative type investments have something they don't have. It's called FDIC insurance. So if you want to sleep at night, and I've got a video about it. It's a little bit lengthy, but if you take the time to look at it, it'll explain to you exactly how it works. And I would highly recommend it for anybody out there who has some money they want to set aside. They have other money for liquidity, but they have some money they want to put aside. They want that maybe they're going to leave it to their kids, they're going to leave it to their grandkids, or maybe it's their money they're going to set aside for their long-term care or some other need. It is FDIC insured. So you can see that video there. I also am in the process here within the next week. We will have up on both sites, I will have up a Social Security seminar on demand that you can get up at 3 o'clock in the morning if you want. You can go on the website. You can calculate your own Social Security. You can calculate what is the best way for you to draw out your Social Security. Now, you'll need to have some numbers. You'll have to know what your Social Security numbers are. But you can plug them in there, and it'll actually calculate out to you, and you don't have to come to a dinner seminar. You don't have to leave your house. You can actually do it in the comfort of your home. So we'll have that on there, and it'll give you a 8-to-10-page printout of exactly what your best option is for drawing out your Social Security. So as you reach retirement age, these are things you have to know. You really need to know, and that's I tell a lot of people about that. The other thing we do in our financial checkup, we're offering a retirement cash flow chart. And if you haven't taken a look at the actual income you have coming in for when you retire, you really want to look at a cash flow chart for when you retire. It's pretty darn important. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and come back with Carl's comments, and we're gonna still bait you here that a little bit later Kevin's gonna come on and talk about some tax ideas for tax planning for year-end planning. So you're listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call. No foolish question when it comes to your money. 503-417-7626. Toll free 800-990-0750. We'll be right back.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. It's time for Carl's comments, and that is a time when I talk about something that's come in my practice or that just seemed like it was of interest to people. And since we were talking about, you know, retirement planning and things like that, and planning for the end of the year is what Kevin's going to be talking about. So I thought, especially and since we're in honor of the approaching Halloween event, I have what I call post-mortem planning. Now, how about that? There's a lawyer thing.
Whoa.
For you. That'll cost you $50. That's but anyway, that's after death.
And that's a probate in waiting.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, believe it or not, there are actually books called post-mortem planning. It's really pretty amazing. I never thought I'd have to do anything after I died, but so the first thing really though is. And this raises an interesting point, because a lot of times people go to a lot of trouble to have their estate plan done, and they may have it reviewed every now and then, but it may be 5-10 years before anybody dies, or even longer. I've had people have trusts, you know, that are 30 years old, and you know, there's dust on it. It's never been opened. Well, one of the things that happens, and I understand why, is that people forget what's in it. And they forget how it was explained to them. And unfortunately, in some circumstances, that's a problem, because there are occasions when there are things you need to do, regardless of what kind of estate planning you've done. So, but the very, very first thing, and this is in all seriousness, is let the dust settle. You don't have to run out and do stuff like yesterday. I actually had someone call me the day after their parent died, and what are we going to do? And I guess, you know, I was like, well, you know, this is a little soon to do that. They certainly didn't have a death certificate, and they hadn't even had a funeral yet. And I thought maybe that's a little too soon, but really what I'm saying is that it's not urgent to do the kind of planning things that I'm talking about, but it is important to do within a reasonable time. And, once you get that reasonable time over, and you've had a time to at least initially grieve, and you've kind of put things back to normal, then you ought to sit down and read the trust or the will, if there is one, and just see what it says, and that will probably remind you of some things, and then it also might make you think about whether or not you want to change things. Now, a lot of times when a husband and wife pass away, there really isn't a whole lot to do, and the will really doesn't come into play, because they oftentimes own everything as joint owners, and everything else is done with beneficiary designations. So there usually isn't a whole lot to do except to notify the companies that have those beneficiary designations. One husband or one wife will maybe has... for whatever reason, has a piece of separate property. This isn't quite as common in Washington because they have community property, but here in Oregon, we're a separate property state, and that means that a husband and wife can own property separately, and it's an individual property. So if, for example, there is a beach house or a cabin or, you know, a commercial property or whatever it is that is owned separately by the deceased spouse, well, guess what? You're going to have to do a probate to get that thing, you know, taken care of, unless it's in a trust. So,
you know, Carl, that comes up quite common when families leave a house, say a beach house, to three kids, and it's co-owned by the three kids, but it's not co-owned by their spouses.
Exactly. A lot of stuff happens like that. So, and that's one of the things that one should anticipate about is you know, what happens with whatever interests I have. You know, you're, like you just said, there one of the spouses could have an interest in a house with their siblings, and then it becomes kind of a messy thing. So it's not something that's insurmountable, but it causes a little bit more stress and stuff. So what I would recommend then is just to take a look at it and see what the property situation is. And again, this is within a reasonable time. The other thing that I think, if you're fortunate enough to have a taxable estate, which means an estate that exceeds $1 million, and you've done some planning, some tax planning in either your will or your trust, it undoubtedly is going to require that you do something at the death of the first spouse. And usually what that means is to separate the deceased spouse's assets into several parts. One of those parts goes into what we usually call a credit shelter trust. Now, here's where it gets really confusing. The whole point of it is to separate roughly $1 million into what's called a credit shelter trust so that you can use your $1 million exemption here in Oregon. And then the surviving spouse gets to use his or her $1 million exemption amount when he or she dies. So theoretically, that allows the couple to transfer up to $2 million tax-free here in Oregon. In Washington, that would be $4 million because there's a $2 million exemption. But they have to do something. First of all, you have to make that plan while both parties are alive. And secondly, after the first death, you have to do something about it. And so one of those things is to allocate assets to this trust. And sometimes it gets really confusing because, like I said, I call it a credit shelter trust, but that same trust is sometimes called a family trust. It's sometimes called a bypass trust. It's sometimes called a B trust. There are all sorts of things that it's called, and people, you know, get confused about it. I prefer to have the trust name it. You know, I mean, have the written document say, this is the bypass trust or this is the credit shelter trust. But they don't necessarily always do that. And unfortunately, it becomes a little inconsistent because different lawyers and stuff use these different names sort of interchangeably. And there are some other names that come into play, too. There's things called Q-tip trusts and marital trusts. And pretty soon, it can get pretty confusing. So it's very important to at least take a look at that. If you don't remember how it's supposed to work, call your lawyer, call your CPA, have them look at it, and they can at least say, oh, this is what we're supposed to do here. And the main thing there is that there's time limits on this. Probably from 9 months to 15 months is about the time limit that you're going to have to do some of this, which really means moving some of the money into this other trust. And it depends on how you're going to move the money into the trust as to when you can do it. Some are done, you know, up until the time of the filing of the inheritance tax return. Others have a 9-month limit as far as doing that. And there are some other limitations about some of the ways that you can put it in there. So it's really important if you're going to be funding this trust to do it, because once you get past the time frame, it's too late really to do it. So anyway, that's the thought that I have is, you know, take some time to review your estate planning, not right away, you know, just, but if you have a taxable estate, it should be done, you know, within the first couple of months, just to make sure that you know what you got to do. And if you don't understand what's in the trust, you know, which I understand is very easy to do, don't throw up your hands and go crazy. Just say, I don't understand this. Take it to your lawyer, take it to your CPA, make sure that they look at it and see if there's anything you have to do.
Yeah, you know, Carl, one of the things we see, unfortunately, way too often is somebody went to some seminar, they did a trust, and then they never moved their assets into the trust. And I see it all the time. People come in, and I say, well, do you have a living trust? And they say, yeah. And I say, well, how come your investment portfolio is still in joint ownership? And they say, well, nobody ever told us we needed to change it. Mm. And so... you see that quite often.
That is a very frustrating thing. And one of the things that now some people, I recommend transferring virtually everything into the trust. However, a lot of times there are people who don't want to have checks with the trustee named on it. And so I tell them, okay, get a joint checking account and put a transfer on death to the trust, or put a transfer on death to your children. And that way it's still safe. It's still, you know, you're not going to have your kids, you know, taking the money out of your check, but you're going to be able to, use that money. And it'll be readily available when somebody dies. But the rest of the assets, the stuff that's bigger, make sure that you have your assets transferred to the trust. We try to send instruction letters to all of those kinds of asset financial institutions. And sometimes we also change beneficiaries so that the trust becomes the beneficiary, usually way down the line. You know, usually the spouse is the first beneficiary and the children are the second beneficiary, and the third beneficiary might be the trust. But even so, it's good to kind of get all of that stuff set up. It's also very important to coordinate to make sure that your beneficiary designations are consistent with your trust or your will planning, because, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon to have all of those things in an estate, but it is important that they work together, because sometimes they can be awkward at best.
Well, I kind of like your first idea of just really doing nothing, and then when the beneficiaries go to the safe deposit box and open it, there's a book in there entitled Postmortem Planning.
And there you go. Well, we could do that. We could
is probably the most expensive kind of planning you could ever do.
It can be.
That's
so do people come in for a reading of the will or the trust anymore?
Not really. There isn't any legal requirement for a reading
It's great TV material.
Yeah. However, I did have a case some years ago, and it was one of the most awkward and unpleasant experiences I had. I didn't draft this will, and so I ended up being the lawyer for the personal representative, and I didn't know the family, so I didn't know anything about it. But one of the provisions of this will was to read this letter that had been sealed and written to one of the beneficiaries. And it was required that it be read orally. And it was this horrible letter that just was just reading this guy out for what a rotten person he was. And I was just, I mean, it was really terrible. And I thought, What a terrible thing to do, you know, stab you from the grave. It just was really bad.
And then did they leave him a buck?
No. They actually left him some money, but not anywhere near the kind of distribution that he might have gotten, I guess. It was just, it was really, really sad. And I don't know whether that person got any satisfaction out of that, but it certainly made me uncomfortable. The guy didn't seem that bad a guy. I didn't see like he deserved that kind of a shot from the grave. But anyway, yes.
Well, listen, if you've got a question, give us a call. The number, again, is 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626, or toll free, 800-990-0750. We'll be right back with the Tax Investigator.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the Tax Investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified, and always a tough act to follow these gentlemen when they've had their coffee on a Saturday morning, but hopefully we've got some good information here on the tax investigator for your 2014 year-end tax planning. And I think I have a few ideas, or maybe, and it's not, some of them aren't necessarily year-end ideas, they're just flat-out good ideas. And some of these you might not have heard of before, and one in particular that we're going to talk about, I think affects a lot of people, and you probably didn't know that this was a significant deduction on your tax return. So to start with, I'm just going to generally cover a few things that may or may not hit your tax situation, but they may. And if they do, I'm not going to go into too much detail on them, but definitely email us or give us a call or research it yourself and see if it fits your situation. We'll have a series of these, and this is certainly isn't all-inclusive right now. We'll just cover a few things. But probably the first thing to do, especially for investors, is to, and we've talked about this quite often, but look to realize any losses that you can while substantially preserving your investment position. Obviously, avoiding the wash, sale, loss rules. And you'll want to deal with your financial advisor on that to make sure you're doing those things correctly. But that is a good thing to do toward the end of the year, especially if you've had some run-up this year in 2014 as the market's ooched up from the beginning of the year. A good way to minimize your taxes there. Another one is in your investment strategy, try to recognize certain types of income rather than you want to recognize, you know, capital gains, things that get favorable tax treatment as opposed to ordinary income. Interest income on investments is treated a lot worse than dividend income, qualifying dividend income. So that's something to look at in your portfolio. So moving on. One thing that I have found has saved clients a lot of money is in the year that you're looking to retire or you're looking to break service with an employer and maybe go to another employer, you've been at your first employer for a while, look at timing the severance pay that you would be getting. There's especially if you're retiring and you're going to have a low income year in 2015, and it's getting toward the end of 2014 here, and you're looking at getting a lump sum as severance pay, negotiate with your employer to get that paid out in 2015. It can be a huge tax savings because you've worked all year, you're in a high income year, and now you've just lumped in a lump sum on top of that. You're going to get hit hard with taxes when next year you may not even be claiming Social Security or retirement. Maybe you're in that donut hole, if you will, before claiming some of your retirement income or being required to take a withdrawal. And so bump that over into 2015, and that can save you a lot of money. And we've had a lot of success just in planning the timing of that. A more advanced strategy for those of our small business owners, those who are in S-Corps and partnerships, there's if you have a loss this year, there's limitations on those losses based on what's called your basis limitation, and there's strategies to get your basis up without having to put in a ton of money into the corporation so that you can recognize those losses. And so that's a pretty significant planning strategy. Again, that's an advanced strategy, but if you have a loss in your corp or your partnership, definitely have your tax planner take a look at how to make sure you're getting benefit of that loss. One thing that people don't know at the end of the year is things charged on a credit card, that counts as a deduction in the year you charge it. You don't have to actually make the payment in cash and pay off that monthly bill for your credit card. So if you're a business or an individual and you're, you know, prepay your, you know, if it's a big medical year and you're going into the doctor on December 26th because of some problem you had during Christmas with family members and the reading of a will, or anyway, something along those lines, you can use your credit card, prepay those expenses or what have you. It counts as a deduction in the year that it's charged. So that's a good planning strategy. Another thing is for mainly businesses, but there's times where individuals can benefit from it, and that is purchasing needed equipment before the end of the year, and you can purchase it on contract. You don't have to pay it off by the end of the year. And again, I say needed equipment because I can't tell you where somebody's had a decent year and they want to minimize their taxes and they go out and they buy a 65 grand fully loaded, dually 4x4 pickup. And yeah, you got a deduction and yeah, you saved 15 grand in taxes, but you know, now you've got a $60,000 bill you're paying off for the next 4 years, and you need your business to make profit these next 4 years, and that's what you're going to be working for the next 4 years. So within reason.
Of course, if you're hauling stuff, it might be beneficial.
Right. That's right.
If you're a construction guy and you're using that truck every day in your job, that might be a worthwhile expense.
No, I carry my briefcase in my truck.
Well, there you go. And you have a jackhammer right beside it, right?
No.
Okay. A sledgehammer.
Yeah.
That's right. So another strategy, and we've talked about this before, is the bunching strategy for end-of-the-year deductions. If you've had a bunch, no pun intended, of medical expenses, maybe you like to pay your property taxes all in 1 year, you know, do the one-third 1 year and do the full amount, the two-thirds in the next to maximize using your standard deduction, so on and so forth, that can be beneficial to make sure that you get the most bang for your buck. Another thing is make sure at the end of the year that you're going to be owing less than $1,000. So work with your withholdings or estimated tax payments, because if you owe more than $1,000 at the end of the year, notwithstanding some rules that apply to your prior year tax return, you're going to owe some penalty. So make sure that you owe federal and Oregon less than $1,000 when it comes April 15th and you're cutting a check to IRS or Oregon. That way you're going to for sure not have to pay penalties and interest. There are, again, some other ways out of that, but that's an easy way to make sure you're not running into that. So this last one is, an often overlooked deduction, and it's called non-business bad debt. And you may, so first off, what is non-business bad debt deduction? Well, non-business bad debt is, have you ever loaned money to a family member and not been paid back? Have you ever loaned money to a friend and not been paid back? Maybe? No?
I'm waiting with bated breath here. Waiting here.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And I think this fits a lot of us. Did you know that can be a write-off on your tax return? Probably not. But it has to follow certain rules, and they're so easy to follow. And, of course, the tax law does look at intent. Were you actually intending to be paid back on these? So it can't be a, you know, quasi gift. Here's another couple examples. And this I know affects a number of people. Maybe you have, and this one's a little complicated, so follow me here, but maybe you have hired a contractor to work on your house. They've performed the work. That contractor has not paid their material suppliers or their employees, and they put a lien on your house, and you want to protect your house. So you pay that, those employees and subcontractors off, and then that contractor doesn't pay you back, that's a non-business bad debt. Definitely a deduction on your tax return.
And a lawsuit.
Absolutely.
And Carl liked that part, especially. I saw his eyes light up.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or maybe another more simple example is you have deposited money with a contractor, and before they perform the work, they go belly up. You now have, and you're not going to get anything for that money, you now have a non-business bad debt. These are write-offs on your tax return. And basically, what you need to do in most cases, especially the I shouldn't say most cases, in the case of the family member loan or the friend or the family member loan, you want to have a promissory note written up in that situation. It's not required, but it just documents your intent. And it says that they legally were required to pay you back. Say you gifted somebody $5,000. I should say gifted. Say you gave somebody $5,000 and you intended for them to pay you back.
You actually lent it to them.
You lent it to them. That's right.
With a contract.
That's right. And you have a note worked up, have it signed. And in the year that becomes worthless, that full amount is reportable on your tax return as a short-term capital loss. And you get a deduction for that. And I don't know how many times when I tell clients that, well, I lent somebody some money, but I suppose I can't take that. Well, you know, yes. And it's not required that you have a promissory note. You just need to show that you intended to have them pay it back, and you need to show why it is worthless. And so it's appropriate to send them a letter.
How long can you carry that forward?
Well, a capital loss is a capital loss.
You can go back and get that. How far back can you go?
Well, you could amend your return back to 3 years to get that.
Too late, Chuck.
I was thinking,
Well, no. But the thing is maybe this is the first. It becomes deductible in the year it becomes worthless. So if this is the first year you've determined it became worthless, put it on this year's tax return. But the letter of the law says that you need to show that it had value at the beginning of the year, it's worthless at the end of the year. I have not run into any trouble with the IRS on this for anything reasonably done.
You mean they don't say it was a worthless piece of paper on January 1 and it's still a worthless piece of paper?
Nope.
Okay.
So far not. So anyway, take a look at what you may have lent. And see if that is a...
Words of wisdom from the tax investigator.
Right. Never a lender nor borrower be, you know. So, well, I have, you know, we lawyers like to talk about hypotheticals. So I've got a tax hypothetical that I want to ask. So, and it fits in with your talk there because, you know, so hypothetically, if I owned a big house and being the busy guy that I am, I don't want to spend my weekend mowing lawns. And I've got maybe some blackberries and, you know, other kind of vegetation that I don't want to mess with. And I don't want to hire a gardener. But I want to get some goats. Can I deduct my goats?
Well, it sounds like you don't have a business going. And so this would be a personal expenditure. So probably not.
How about if it's a rental?
Oh, if it's a rental, I'd be worried about what sort of tenants like goats wandering around their house.
Goat herders.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Maybe you're using the goats for goat milk.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's still personal. But if it's related to your rental and around your rental and on the property, that would probably be a deduction.
Well, okay. we're gonna herd ourselves out of here and come right back with the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified. If you got a question, you've only got a few minutes, give us a call. We'll answer it. You're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626 Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Well, you're listening to the Knowledge Trust on Investing Simplified. This is a time when we kind of open it up on a free-for-all, but before we get started that, I'm going to drive you back to my website at pfgwm.com. If you pull up news articles, you'll find a couple of things on there that I really highly recommend, particularly if you're one of those people we were talking about earlier, that you're concerned about the markets, you're concerned about safety, you want something that's FDIC insured, you'd like to have a little upside, but you don't want to have any downside. This is a great product for you to look at, and it's called Alternative CD. And I have a little video there that's 2 minutes long. So if you can take 2 minutes, sit down, look at it, it'll explain all about it. And if you're interested in that, you can give me a call. But it's very educational for 2 minutes to look at and understand what it really is. And it has a peace of mind feature in it that it is FDIC insured up to $250,000. So it does give peace of mind there. And then there's also another one on there about risk reward, and that was presented by an attorney who writes articles for investment companies, and he's got a lot of stuff on my site as well. And he actually did a study on risk versus reward. And if you don't read that and you don't understand what risk and reward is, this is probably one of the best. It's very long, but boy, it's got a lot of factual information. And when you read that, you'll truly understand the risk of investing your money. And if you're going to invest your money, one of the biggest things I tell people is, if you don't understand your risk tolerance, you should not invest. I don't care what it's in, if it's in real estate, if it's in stocks or bonds. If you don't understand the risk tolerance you can take, then you shouldn't invest in it. Because if you can't take a 10% hit or a 20% hit, but you want to make 10%, you're living in fantasy land. It's not going to happen. You're going to have that volatility. So you need to understand that before you write a check. Well, that's my soapbox, guys. But again, you go to my website at pfgwm.com. We also have our book there. The book will be out in about 2 weeks. You can pre-order the book now for $15.99. It'll come out at $19.95, and you can pre-order it on the website. It'll be out on Amazon and at 25,000 other retailers here in about 3 weeks. So it'll be available.
You know, it's too bad that Oprah's not on anymore. I think that would be a good show for Oprah.
I'm going to try to get on Ellen.
Oh, okay.
Well, no. You mentioned you have a Social Security calculator on your website, and I just became aware that I haven't followed it closely, but I didn't know the Social Security Administration doesn't mail out the annual summary of your Social Security benefits, whether you're still a worker or...
It does every 5 years.
Every five,
it does,
okay.
It does on like on 45, 50, 55, 60.
But I hear you can go to ssa.gov, their website, and you can get it in a matter of about 5 minutes, your own.
Well, you can, but one of the things I will caution you, you need to make sure you check out your birth certificate, because I don't know how the government can do so much information on you and me. But when you go on there and you want to get information on your Social Security, you better know everything that's off your birth certificate and have it correct, like your mother's maiden name and those kind of things. Because if you're wrong, it better be the same one that's on your Social Security card and when you signed up for it. That information better. And I don't know how the government can't even connect driver's license and terrorists. But I don't know how they can go back and get all of our birth certificates in there and have all that information in there. And the Social Security Department's got it, when the Social Security Department can't even tell you how much money they've taken in and how much money they've paid out. So I don't know, but they can sure tell everything about us. Can anybody
say? Well, you kind of wonder if you just put – maybe it's like one, those little round eight ball things where you ask it a question and it says – sorry, the moon's wrong, or, and maybe there's just a little guy back there that sits there all day long and somebody types in, what's my benefit? And he says, I don't know.
Well, you almost kind of wonder about that, because you do have to look. But the one thing I can tell you from doing this and doing seminars on it, the information on the Social Security printout that you usually get is about 2 years behind.
Actually, I've heard that they use the calculation on the 2 years back. That it's the last income that they consider is the like right now it would be like 2013 or something like that.
Yeah, but when you go in and you want to start collecting, then they'll update it and they'll bring it up to value. And if you get the right person to go in to talk to at the Social Security Department, if you want to go in, and I highly recommend this because even all the things that we can come up with, however close we can come, there's nothing like going in, sitting down, really looking at your file because we don't have access to that. But you can go in, and the Social Security Department, if you get the right person, and most of them are pretty nice about it.
They are.
They'll tell you exactly what your benefit will be on the predetermined date you want to start taking it. So it's pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, the SSA people have seemed to have always provided good service and good advice as far as I've been aware. I did see if you are a Social Security recipient, the COLA for 2015 has been released at 1.7%. So
yeah, so on $2,000, you get 34 more bucks. And, you know, I don't mean to boohoo that because for some people, that Social Security is very, very important to their livelihood. It's very important. And my only comment on that is, and I talk about this somewhat in my book, but here's some factual things that people need to know. Kevin, what is the Social Security requirement that you have to, it's 6.2% that an employee has to put in and the employer has to match?
That's right.
Now, 6.2 and 6.2 is 12.4. I noticed the article that came out and all the newspapers printed, the only part they talked about was the part that the employee paid. They didn't mention that the employer pays. Now, here's a question for you. People that contribute to 401k plans, what is the average percentage people put in?
Five.
I was going to say five.
Well, it's about four. Mm. Pretty good. Pretty good. And it's usually up to the match. Some companies only do three. That's why it's down low because some people put in 10. But even if you put in 10 and your employer matches three, you got 13% going in, right? Now, on Social Security, you put 6.2 and 6.2. How much is that? That's 12.4. Most people in America put way more into Social Security because they have to than they ever put in their 401k. But I'm going to tell you what, when you get at the end of the road, if you put into your 401k and you did that 4% and you got the 3%, why is that 7 to 8% that you put in always way more than your Social Security cash? It kicks the crap out of it. So if the Social Security Department had actually taken that money and done what they were supposed to have invested it, even if they made 5%, Social Security would be way higher than it is today. And that's why I kind of boo-hooed the 1.7, because in all honesty, they should be giving seniors a 4 and 5% increase and cutting the pensions from Congress and the House and the Senate because they wasted the money. And that's the reality of it. People have gotten, you know, Bernie Madoff went to jail for a Ponzi scheme. We keep electing the same stupid guys that have been to put a Ponzi scheme on us for the last 60, 70 years.
It's that would be a good calculation to, and I think I could easily do it. Maybe next week I'll have it, is take somebody and see, you know, how much they paid in over their lifetime and how much they received up until the time they passed. And if there's any chance of even possibly recovering what you put in, especially considering the time value of money where you've put in over 40 years,
I can tell you this, Kevin. I have a chapter all about that in the book, and I use some numbers from a multimillionaire, Malcolm Burko, that I've talked about on this show a lot. He actually did that, and he actually wrote a letter to the Social Security Department, and they informed him they do not have accurate records to tell how much they've taken in and how much they've paid out. And he also calculated out, and he said anybody under 70 and under today is probably going to lose $200,000 to $400,000 because life expectancy is only 78. And if you draw it out for 8 years, you got to almost live to 90 to get it back. And very few people live to 90.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate that.
Sorry about that, Kevin. Hey, listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll, Kevin's house, let me get a hold of you.
We're at bakercolson.com, 503-666-5569.
Carl?
Warren Allen, 503-255-8795.
And we're at pfgwm.com at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, 503-253-3000. We'll be back next week to Investing Simplified.
We do Investing Simplified.